to The Pete Space, sponsored by Palette Life Sciences. My name is Simone Howell. Many of you know me, but for those of you who don't, I've had the privilege of working with Deflux Development, Education, and Training for over 20 years. I am currently head of medical affairs for Palette Life Sciences. We envision the PED space to be your resource for sharing best practices and compelling conversations across a wide variety of pediatric urology and VUR topics. On today's episode, we'll be speaking with Dr. Aaron Martin, a pediatric urologist at LSU Children's Hospital New Orleans. He's speaking about the art of telemedicine and tips on how to improve patient trust. In this uncertain time of coronavirus, telemedicine has become a vital tool for the medical community to better serve their patients and enhance the patient experience. The content in this podcast is solely the opinion of Dr. Martin, and we so appreciate his willingness to share his expertise. And now, it is my pleasure to introduce Dr. Aaron Martin.
First, I'd like to thank Palette Life Sciences for providing this educational forum so we can better serve our colleagues and patients. I was thrilled to be asked to record this podcast, and given the general topic of telemedicine, which has definitely become the socially distanced healthcare delivery modality of choice over the last month for most of us, our system, just like everyone else, was forced to quickly get our virtual game in the gear. But fortunately, this has been a project of mine for the last 6 years, and our children's hospital already had rapidly expanding telemedicine program up and running, and this gave us a sizable jump to be able to quickly expand to all five hospitals in our system and all providers without many of the usual hiccups. So we were very fortunate in that sense. That being said, there are essentially two overarching aspects of telemedicine. And the first is basically the practice of telemedicine, or the practical stuff, meaning the infrastructure, the scheduling, the workflow, the charting, the billing, all the headaches that everybody's been going through who hasn't done this before. Those I'm not going to talk about today because that's the topic of basically every other talk that's out there. There's thousands of talks out there. There's thousands of newly found, quote, experts in the field just in the last few weeks. And so we certainly don't need another talk on that. And there's many out there that you can find. And I'm certainly happy to point you to any of those if you wish. What I want to talk about today is the next piece, what I refer to as the art of telemedicine. This is no different to what in our medical school and probably all the medical schools around the nation call something like clinical skills integration. This encompasses the art of good history taking, reading visual cues, presenting yourself as a caring person that the patient can trust, and forming that sacred bond that allows patients to be completely honest. In my case, a trust that allows a patient to hand me their precious child for surgery with the understanding that for the next however long it takes, I'll look over that child as if they're my own. That's a special trust. That's unique to medicine. That's why a lot of us got into this. When I started doing telemedicine, I'll never forget a physician leader who I first went to looking for some support, and he declined to fund my project because he said, and I quote, "I don't understand how you can form a patient-physician relationship over a computer screen." Needless to say, I politely left, looked for a different supporter, and fortunately found one. But he did bring up a valid concern. Clinicians in the art of healing are intimately tied with touch. And of course, you can't touch over telemedicine, at least not physically. There are countless quotes and examples of this even in the Bible and other ancient texts. It should not be surprising that some struggle with the idea of practicing medicine over a camera. Or should it be surprising? We are taught in medical school that the most important aspect of our ability to diagnose and heal is our history taking. Multiple studies have calculated that over 80% of diagnoses can be determined by a good history alone. And in fact, in some cases, if clinicians are presented with diagnostic information before the history, they're more likely to be fooled into a wrong diagnosis. So this podcast will focus on just that and hopefully give you some practical skills and setup needed to form that relationship and trust that we so easily do in the office. Perhaps the best person to teach this course would be your local news anchor. Everyone has their favorite. Perhaps the most famous American broadcaster of all time, Walter Cronkite, was labeled by Time magazine as the man with America's trust. Now, think about it. Would a patient open up to Walter Cronkite about their intimate health issues? Maybe. But that just shows how good we clinicians need to be on camera, or more accurately, how human we need to come across. This starts as basic as your telemedicine setup. Regardless of your specific platform, all require a camera and microphone. Obviously, higher quality webcams and professional microphones enhance the fidelity of your output. But before you break your budget, remember, the quality on the patient side is determined by their receiving device, which is typically their smartphone via Wi-Fi or cellular signal. And if you're like my practice, sometimes it's not so good. Some recommend a headset with an attached microphone. And while certainly this is probably provides better sound quality on your end, I'm not really a fan of these. I never have gotten into them, mainly because it makes me look like an air traffic controller or a phone operator and definitely not like a doctor. And anyone who knows me knows I need all the help I can get. More importantly, it's how you stage yourself. Remember, you're trying to mimic the perfect in-person clinic encounter, except you don't have the advantage of having all the clinic stuff behind you that makes you look good. First, you need to be in a private, quiet room without the risk of an inadvertent person walking in on you. That's key, basic 101 of privacy. There's no quicker way to lose a patient's trust than for them to think others could be watching or listening in. Your background should be neutral, not cluttered. You can have your practice logo behind you if you want to get fancy, but avoid the goofy or comical backgrounds on some programs. While some patients may appreciate it, some may just think you're being a little too silly, and especially if it's your first visit with them, that's not the impression you want to give. There needs to be good lighting coming from ideally in front of you. Think of it like when you take a picture. Backlighting is going to make you appear to be coming down from heaven, and unless this is your intention, then you probably want to avoid that. I find having two screens is ideal, so you can have one with the video on it and one with the chart, and this allows you to kind of go back and forth seamlessly during your visit and review things. It also lets you look at imaging. I recommend wearing your white coat with the name tag visible, even if that's not your practice in person. I don't normally wear a white coat in person because I don't want to scare the child, and I find it helps. But on the camera, it's a totally different situation, and you want to look as professional as possible. It lends that extra sense of professionalism and elevates the conversation beyond just a FaceTime chat that you're having with your buddies. You also want to pay attention to your clothing underneath your white coat as well, which sometimes you forget. And this is a mistake I made early on. In one of my first telemedicine encounters years ago, I discovered something known as spatial aliasing. I didn't know anything about it then, but this is a phenomenon that occurs when wearing narrow, thin stripes on camera. And all the news guys know about this. When you do it, it causes a very distracting, wavy, psychedelic pattern come alive on your picture. And this can be very distracting, not only to your patient, but to you if you see yourself in the picture. And it's not the best impression to give. So stick to kind of solid colors, light colors, make sure it doesn't match your background, those kind of things. Your camera should be as close to eye level as possible. And this is one of the most important things that people forget about. You need to frame yourself in the image with the top third of your chest up visible, so they can see kind of your shoulders and your head. You want to avoid the floating head look or the extreme close-up look. This just looks unprofessional and looks like you set it up overnight. Probably the most overlooked and hardest skill to master is you must look directly into the camera. This is kind of an awkward thing at first because we're not used to that. We're used to looking at the patient's eyes. But if you look at the patient's eyes, depending on where that is on your screen, you're either going to be looking away from them or staring at their neck or their chest, depending on, again, the relation of your camera and where you have them on your screen. So what I did at the beginning was I moved the patient's video as close to the camera attached to my screen as possible to limit my eye movement away from the camera itself. And this helped remind me to look into the camera. So now most of my visits, I'm looking directly into the lens of the camera and ignoring the picture completely unless there's something they need me to see on the picture itself. As with most introductions, you want to start the visit with a smile. You introduce yourself. Ask them to recite the patient's name and date of birth so that you can confirm everyone is on the same page. You want to make sure you have the right patient that you're looking at on the screen because you don't have your nurse to tell you this on the telemedicine visits typically. You want to pay attention to your facial expressions. You remember, they're looking directly at you, so your expressions are what conveys everything. Your personal skills and ability to show empathy are magnified, but don't let this paralyze you. Just be yourself and have a conversation. It's also a good idea to tell the patient when you're looking away at the chart on the other screen, or if you're just reading the chart, to let them know, because your eyes are going to be moving and they're going to see that and it's going to look like you're ignoring them. You don't want that to happen. So if I'm ever looking away from the chart for an extended period of time, I make sure I mention that, something you don't have to do in person. Our platform also allows us to share images and draw directly on them. And so this helps a lot. When I'm looking at an image, instead of looking at it by myself, I pull it up, share it with the patient. I show them exactly what I'm looking at. I'll annotate on it. It makes the visit a lot more interactive and something that they enjoy a lot more. I also encourage the patient to share or send in pictures ahead of time of sensitive general exam findings, both for better quality than a live shot and to decrease the awkwardness of an on-screen general exam. It puts the patient much more at ease than asking them to do it during real time or try to focus on the patient's genitalia while they're holding the camera at the same time. It can be quite clumsy. It's also a good idea to finish the visit by sending them a summary shortly after any educational materials that could be helpful, and follow-up recommendations, just like you'd hand them in the office. And that's it. That's the art of a telemedicine visit. We already do it every day. It just needs to be modified to be suitable for TV, so to speak. It's important also to remember that it's okay that telemedicine isn't appropriate for all conditions. Our program is set up with the caveat that it is to be used to enhance, not replace care. It should be led by physicians and clinicians looking to improve the experience of their own patients, to reach them when they need it, where they need it, and to guide them back to the office when that is more appropriate. We need to be very careful that this is not taken away from us by insurance companies or private ventures looking to offer quick fixes without continuity of care. This always has been and always will be our responsibility as physicians or clinicians. So I ask that you please, now that this has become widespread, embrace it, take control of it, and make it a part of your practice. I'll leave you with a quick example of enhanced care via telemedicine. I had a 16-year-old young woman with spina bifida return to my office with her mother for follow-up. She was about 2 years overdue for a follow-up and hadn't followed any of my recommendations from our previous visit. Long story short, they were scared. Her prior visit, things weren't going well. She was having trouble coping with the transition of becoming a teenager. She didn't want a cath. She was angry at her condition and being different, so they just withdrew. The recommendations from my end at the follow-up visit were the same, but she wouldn't even speak during the visit. She just sobbed the entire time. It was not a good encounter, and it was an in-person encounter, but I didn't really know what more to do. She had been told what would happen if she didn't do these things, and I couldn't seem to comfort her or even get her to express what her real fears were. I just started up our telemedicine program, so I set up a visit in 2 months, which they could do from their home, which was 3 hours away, so it was much more convenient for them, and I was really hoping to not lose them again. To my surprise, they logged on that day, and we had a great visit. In her own home, she was a completely different child. She was smiling, she was interacting, she was open with her struggles. She even agreed to give catheterization a try. This really is enhanced care. And so the naysayers out there who say you can't give the same amount of care when you're doing it virtually versus in person, they're just wrong. Sometimes you need that change of venue. Sometimes you need to have them in a comfortable setting in order for them to open up. And this is that special trust, allowing you into their home to share in their most intimate needs. This is why telemedicine will continue. And this is why I encourage you to be a part of that in your practice. So don't be afraid to enhance the care you give your patients. Embrace this opportunity and change your practice for the better.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Pete Space. We hope you enjoyed Dr. Martin's perspective. Feel free to share with your colleagues while we deliver more pediatric urology-focused content in the coming weeks. There are some great resources for you and your patients for Deflux on www.deflux.com. Additionally, you can learn more about our company and our products on www.palatelifesciences.com.